Hey there, welcome back to another episode of Foot Traffic. Today we are interviewing, Susan Fowler. Susan is an author. She's incredible. I am so excited to share this episode with you today. She co-authored the book Self-Leadership and the One-Minute Manager. So if you're a fan of any of the One-Minute Manager books, Susan is a senior consultant for Ken Blanchard Companies. And she is here today talking about her book called Master Your Motivation. So good, you guys. I shared on my Instagram stories the day that I recorded this. For a moment, I forgot I was interviewing and I started taking notes like I was listening to her. And then I all of a sudden freaked out when I'm going, oh my, I need to be prepped for the next question. And I don't even know what I'm saying. She was so good. I hope you get so much out of this episode and hearing just how we are always motivated, but what type of motivation and what are we lacking and how do we just so much good stuff. I don't even want to ramble on any longer. I just want to dive in. So I hope you enjoy this as much as I do. Make sure to tag Susan and I with your biggest takeaways from this episode. Growing your business doesn't have to be difficult. It's all about mastering a few key techniques, systems, and mindset. Welcome to Foot Traffic. With over a million downloads, it's the go-to marketing podcast dedicated to helping you grow your small business. I'm your host, Stacey Tuschel. I've been an entrepreneur for over 15 years, and I own multiple seven-figure businesses. Together, you and I are going to get you more customers in the door, more profit in your pocket, and more happiness in your home. Let's transform your business starting right now. Hey there, and welcome back to another episode of Foot Traffic. Today, we are diving in with Susan Fowler. She is the author of Master Your Motivation. So, Susan, welcome to the show. I'm excited to dive in.
Thank you, Stacey. I hope that people will be optimally motivated with the message.
I hope so, too. So, first of all, why this book? Like, what was the reason that came up for you? What were you seeing? What was the reason behind writing it moving forward?
Well, you know, thank you for asking that question because I think a lot of people probably can relate. Almost 40 years ago, I was trying to do what we all try to do, lose weight, you know, take control of my life and change my habits. And I was struggling. And then one night I watched a documentary about the way we treat animals that we eat. And I'm not a particularly, you know, I never had a pet, you know, that kind of stuff. But I just stopped eating meat. And I was a girl that had pork fat sitting on her stove in a can so that I could cook with it because everything tasted better with pork fat. And literally overnight stopped eating all kinds of meat, anything flavored with any kind of meat. And people would say, oh, wow, you're so disciplined. That takes so much willpower. And I was just like curious because it didn't. It was like really quote unquote easy to do. I had to learn how to do it, but my motivation for doing it was unquestionable. And so I really became very curious. And then also I own my own advertising agency. So I've been an entrepreneur my whole life and I was really into, you know, what motivates people to buy your product or your services or whatever. So motivation was always a topic I was curious about. So I really went on a search to understand motivation. And then I finally found, and this is like over 25 years ago, the motivation science. And there is compelling motivation science. In fact, a groundbreaking, probably the most groundbreaking science in the history of motivation that I've become quote unquote expert about. And when I say expert, it's that I understand the research and the science, but what I really work to do is to say, how do we apply it? Mm-hmm. How do we actually use this in our own lives? So I'm not a motivational speaker. I speak on the science of motivation, but what I'm really trying to do is to help people apply it in their personal and professional lives.
I love this. This is one of these podcasts that I'm going to be so into. I'm going to forget that I'm interviewing and I'm just going to be soaking it all up. So this is so good. And this is going to relate so much with everybody listening. But your book specifically talks about these three scientific truths for achieving your goals. Can we talk a little bit about those three truths?
Let's do. Okay. I would love to. And what I'd love for your listeners to think about and for you is to think about it in a number of different ways. So master your motivation is really about these three scientific truths that you can use for achieving your own goals or to start or stop a habit. But it's also about how you can lead or parent or teach better. So these are ideas that I want you to start to apply for yourself, but then how do you use it with the people that you lead, teach, and parent? But then also, if you're a business owner, I'm thinking, wow, you know, this is so relevant to what is it that I'm trying to create with my, through my customer service or through my marketing efforts. You know, that's my background. I own my own advertising agency for years. And I thought, oh, if I'd only really understood this stuff back then. So I think there's a lot of different ways you might be able to apply it. So let's say that you can, is it okay just to use a goal that anybody might have, like losing weight, just as an example?
Yeah, that's an easy analogy that everybody can kind of relate to. So I think it's great to start there.
Yeah. And then also we can apply it, for example, to sales as well. Okay. So, so let's say that you have this goal, and if you don't have these three psychological needs that are really being created as you pursue your goal, then you're not going to have the sustainable energy to be able to achieve your goal. So when you have these three scientific truths that are being created, it's the difference between when you need energy and you drink a cup of coffee or drink a cola or have a candy bar versus having a handful of almonds or something healthy that really sustains you over time. And the three scientific truths, the first one is for choice. In other words, we have a psychological need for choice. If we're doing something because we feel like we have to do it, it automatically undermines the energy we need to do it. So the reason diets don't work is because as soon as we say, oh, I have to lose weight, or I can't eat this muffin, we have just automatically eroded our feeling, our perception of choice, and we're no longer creating that in our lives. And so we think it's all about the muffin. Like we go, oh, wow, I can't eat this muffin. I'm on a diet. And then we get all, you know, upset about not eating the muffin. And so what do? We actually end up eating the muffin because we think that's what we want. But what we really wanted was a sense of choice. And so the skill of motivation is really about being able to say, oh, I need choice. So what are my choices? Mm. I could choose to eat the muffin. I could choose not to eat the muffin. I could choose to eat a part of the muffin. I could take a bite. I could take a lick, you know. I have all kinds of choices. And what happens as soon as you acknowledge that you have choice, oftentimes that's all you need in order to make the right choice. Mm-hmm. So let's say in sales, what happens is we incentivize. We give people bonuses and raises and all kinds of stuff. And what the as research shows, is that as soon as we put pressure on people, they internalize it as pressure. Oh, I have to do this in order to meet my goals. Oh, I have to do this to win the reward. Oh, I have to do this to make the incentive. We're actually eroding the sense of choice. So all of the techniques that we use to promote and quote unquote motivate ourselves and others, especially in the workplace, have really been proven to be ineffective. Hmm.
Yeah, this is so good. And I'm loving just hearing the science behind it, because we can hear, oh, I do this. This is a common thing. This is something that I've said or I've, you know, and we need to really understand this if we want to move forward and get past it.
Yeah. Anytime you hear yourself saying, oh, I have to do something, that's probably because you have what's called suboptimal motivation, that you're feeling some kind of imposition or you're feeling some kind of pressure or tension or stress, and that automatically erodes your optimal motivation.
Mm, right. How can you be motivated when you feel the pressure of having to do that? And even in business, I mean, you can very easily see how this resonates when you're thinking, oh, I have to create the logo today. I have to do, we say that so much. And
well, you know, Stacey, I think we've all probably done this. You set up a meeting, you set the meeting up and then it pops up on your calendar and you go, oh, I can't believe I have to go to that meeting today.
Right.
No. And we did it. So oftentimes our own expectations or the things that we set up for ourselves actually create that erosion of our sense of choice. Mm. And so the thing we really need to do is to, throughout our day, notice that and then just ask ourselves, what choices do I have? Or if you're thinking about like your diet, you can actually also think about, what are the choices I've made in the past? How did I feel about those choices? What are the choices I have now? How do I feel about these choices? What choices could I make going forward? And so it's all about just asking yourself and getting in touch with the fact you do have choice and start to recognize how you feel about those choices.
You know, looking at your calendar, like when you brought up the call and, you know, just look at your calendar for this week. And then you might start to even feel that come up of why did I do this? So let's say somebody is looking at their calendar and they're regretting and they put something on there that they wish they didn't. What would you tell them, or how do they move forward to get out of this to start to build the schedule they want to build to stay motivated?
Well, I love that question because that really relates to the second psychological need or the second scientific truth. And what the science says is that we need all three of these psychological needs in play if we're going to really move or shift, I call it, from suboptimal to optimal motivation. So I love that idea of looking at your calendar and just seeing where, you know, where do you get a knot in your stomach, or, you know, where do you go, I can't believe I have to do that. So the first thing is to ask those questions around choice. But then the second part is to ask yourself questions around connection. So oftentimes what happens is when we feel that pressure, tension, stress, or we're thinking, oh, I'm glad I'm getting paid to do that, otherwise I wouldn't want to do it, what happens is we've lost connection. Mm-hmm. So the first psychological need is for choice. The second one is for connection. And connection can mean either we have a genuine sense of belonging or a genuine, authentic relationship with others. The second could be part of it could be that what we're doing is aligned to really important values or a sense of purpose that we have. Mm-hmm. And the third part is something that's really true of all human beings. And so all of these psychological needs, by the way, are for every human being, regardless of race, creed, culture, generation, gender. And that is our need to contribute to the greater good, our need to feel that we are doing something that benefits the welfare of the whole. And so if you look at your calendar and you're getting that pit in your stomach, or you're on your diet and you're going, I can't believe I can't have this hamburger and fries. What you need to do is then say, okay, why am I doing this? How does it align to my values? Or how does this give me a sense of purpose? Or how might this help others? Or how does this help me feel that I'm making a contribution? And so, you know, one of the things I do, I travel a lot for my work. I hate going through security. I mean, there's no way that I'm ever going to love going through security. And when I get there, I go, oh, I don't have any choice. I have to go through security. And then I go, oh, wait a minute. I do have a choice. I don't have to take this work. I don't have to fly for a living. Mm-hmm. I could, you know, run through security and get arrested. I have all kinds of choices. But then I think, but what connection do I have? I don't really see a lot of meaning going through security. I mean, there's not, I don't have a lot of value around that. I'm not even sure it works. And so what I need to do then, and I write about this in my book, because this was a real aha moment for me, was I said, how can I create connection going through security? And I thought, what are my values? And I realized I had a value for learning. I love to learn. And so I thought, okay, I have a value for learning. What could I learn going through security? And I realized that the reason I was doing this is because I was so stressed out. I was like, oh, I have to go through security. And I thought, wow, Susan, you could learn patience going through security. And so in my book, I share a story about what happened when I did that. And I ended up getting in the longest line that had a family with a newborn child and a toddler. And I just talk about what happened to me, and I won't go through the whole story on your podcast, but bottom line is that I ended up really helping this young couple who was traveling for the first time with two young children. And they told me that they couldn't have gotten through that experience without my help. And by the time I got on the plane, I was like, wow, I just lived my life purpose, which is to be a catalyst for good. And now every time I go through security, I'm looking to make a connection. How can I help someone, an older couple, or a single mother traveling with all that paraphernalia? You know, how can I just maybe make a TSA agent's day by being kind or friendly? And my husband will tell you that I actually look forward now to going through security because it just gives me another opportunity to make a connection.
Yeah. Such a good story, Susan. Oh, thank you for sharing that. I'm the same way. I have little patience. I hate standing in lines. I'm like rushing through security to sit at the gate for an hour and a half when I have no place to, I don't know why I do it either. So these are good tips for me.
And here's why you do it. It's because we need to think we have that time that we have control over, because we need, you know, having a choice is having a sense of control over our time. Yeah. And so security is eroding that sense of choice. You don't have discretionary time. It's wasting your time, and you value time. And so, yeah, so it's really important for us to recognize when we do feel that way, Stacey, that just to be aware, wow, the reason I'm feeling this is because my choice is being eroded and my connection is being eroded. And then the third scientific truth is for competence. So it's choice, connection, and competence. Okay. And all three of these need to be in concert. It's like drinking an elixir. Each one of these elixirs is really powerful, but when they're all combined, they're truly magical. And competence means that whatever you're doing, whether it's your diet or it's selling, it's marketing, it's looking at something on your calendar, is that there's a sense you'll grow and learn from it, that you're going to make progress, that you're actually demonstrating skill. And so we all have a need for that. You know, think about a little baby learning to walk. They fall down. Why? Because they don't have the competence to walk. Mm-hmm. But they don't get up crying and saying, oh, I'm such a stupid baby. No, I can't walk. You know, they get up and they're laughing and they're running with joy. Why? They might not have mastered walking, but they're making progress and they love learning. I get so frustrated by our school systems because we end up eroding our natural love of learning by incentivizing learning, by giving kids rewards or, you know, applying pressure or incentivizing them to learn. And what the science says is you cannot add external motivation to something we already love doing and make it better. In fact, when you add external motivation to what we already love doing, you ruin or undermine what you love doing. Mm. So we've just gone in the wrong direction in so many of our practices because we actually love to learn. So when you're looking at your calendar, like you were talking about, and you're saying, oh, look what I've got here, ask yourself, what can I learn? Like today, I looked at, you know, that you and I were going to be doing this session today, and I thought, wow, I chose to do this podcast because I can get my word out, which is just my life purpose, is to make sure as many people know these ideas as possible. And every time I do a podcast, I learn something. So I already learned something by looking at your website and looking at the kind of topics that, and you know, I listen to a number of your podcasts, and I learned something. And I know I'll learn something today as well. So those are the three scientific needs.
So I get this a lot as I'm talking to business owners. They will all of a sudden say something like, not everybody, but there's stages of business owners who will say, like, they've had success and then they feel this, I don't know what's next, but they know they want something more. And I would love to kind of dive in there. What do you say to somebody like that? And I've gone through those stages. I've been an entrepreneur now for 18 years. I've had that many times where I feel like I've outgrown what I'm doing, but I don't know where to find that motivation to keep going to the next thing.
Well, and that's interesting because if you ask yourself, why have I, you know, kind of lost the mojo, you know, why is it I'm looking for something new? It's probably because your psychological need for competence is no longer being met. You don't feel like you're growing and learning, and you don't see yourself making progress. And so that's really an important learning, and it's an important thing to notice. And then also you might have lost a sense of meaning. You know, maybe you're disconnected. And the reason that this happens to a lot of entrepreneurs is because we get into a business because we love the content of the business, you know, usually.
Yeah.
If you get into it because you think, oh, this is a great way to make money, this is a great way to have status or power, those are all suboptimal reasons for doing whatever you're doing. And you're not going to sustain your energy over time. So if you, and I see this happening with a lot of, you know, like multi-level marketing, people get into it because they think they're going to make a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And so that's a suboptimal reason, that's suboptimal motivation. And so that's like eating, you know, the candy bar instead of that handful of almonds. And so if you've gotten into your business for the wrong reasons, which is like power, money, status, image, you're not going to sustain your energy over time. But let's say you got into it for the right reasons, and it's something that you feel you chose to do it. So you've got the three C's going on. You chose to do it. you know that you're living your life purpose or you're making a difference, you're contributing to the greater good of others, and that you're growing and learning and you're mastering something and you feel good about that. And then, you know, again, the mojo dies or you're, like you say, you're looking for the next thing. Then it's really interesting for you to be able to say, wow, okay, look at the choices I've made. How do I feel about those choices? What choices could I make going forward? Okay, what are my values? What could I do that really aligns with my values and takes my values to another level or really even makes my contribution greater or that helps me feel more authentic to the person that I am or that I want to be? And what would I get excited about learning or how could I grow? You know, what is it that I'm going, you know, what's the best use of my skill and how could I use that skill to develop even more skill? Yeah. So again, if you just start asking yourself the questions around choice, connection, and competence, your next steps really become so apparent. That's what I was doing this morning. I've got 3 best-selling books. I get to travel around the world speaking. One of my books is my second book is coming out in 5 weeks in Russia. I just got the notice of that.
Oh, wow. Congrats.
Yeah. And so it's like, it's really exciting. And then I thought, wow, I'm just not doing enough with these ideas. And so I sat down and I just spent a couple of hours this morning thinking about, okay, where can I take this? How can I grow this? How can I, you know, make a bigger difference? It's so much fun.
Well, and I'm listening to what you're saying and I'm trying to go back to a moment where I felt like I was losing motivation or I didn't know where to go next. And I agree with you. I think I, in my head, was thinking I'm bored. I'm not being challenged. I like growth. Mm-hmm. But going back to that moment now as somebody older, I can see there were definitely areas I could have learned and done better, but I couldn't see that in the moment. So I was feeling, you know, but like looking now, oh, there are so many things I could have done better. But in the moment, it's hard to even find those blind spots.
Well, I think that's a really good point. And so anytime you feel yourself longing for something, mm-hmm. what I would challenge you to think about is what is it that I'm longing for? And you can almost, because these 3 psychological needs are what is called foundational. In other words, they are at the base of all of our motivation. And motivation is at the heart of everything we do and everything we don't do that we wish we did. And so if you keep going back to those 3, you know, choice, connection, and competence, you'll probably figure out what you're longing for. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes what happens is that entrepreneurs, because they're so successful, they've gotten trapped in the money they're making, or the prestige or the status that they've gained. Yeah. And ironically, all of that limits their choices. They start to think, oh, I can't do something different because I can't afford to not have this income. Or I can't do that because I can't afford to take a risk. And so by our own success, we oftentimes limit our choices. And that's what we're longing for. We're longing for the day when we had all those choices. And the fact is, you always have them. Right. But you forget because you get so trapped into all of the external pressure.
Yeah. What would you say are the biggest distractions when it comes to being motivated?
Yeah, I love that question because a chapter in my book is actually called Fatal Distractions. Mm. And the reason we have fatal distractions is because we allow ourselves to get trapped or distracted by the shiny objects.
Yes.
And so, you know, it's so easy because we've been conditioned. Most of the ways we motivate people at work or that we've been motivated in the past through our work and in schools was based on B.F. Skinner's early work on pigeons, where they conditioned the pigeon that if the pigeon did certain things, he would get a pellet and he would get rewarded. And so we're all conditioned to think that the only way we're going to do something is to be rewarded. Mm-hmm. And so the biggest fatal distraction is that we think that rewards are what motivate us. And so I just really challenge everyone to think about what would you do if you weren't getting paid to do it? What would you do if you weren't afraid of disappointing someone's expectations of you? You know, so it's really, so we get the fatal distractions are like wanting to live up to other people's expectations, having un, reasonable expectations for ourselves. It's the way we internalize the world around us. Mm. I'm so fascinated, Stacy, by you take two siblings who grow up in the same household with the same, maybe let's say that's an abusive household or that it's a real challenging household with financially or whatever. And one is internalizes that as, wow, I'm never going to go through this again, or I'm going to make sure nobody else ever goes through this again. And they go towards a life of philanthropy or charity work or whatever. And the other person says, oh, I'm a victim. I can't believe this has happened to me. You know, they go towards drugs or they become a bully or whatever. And so it's the way we internalize the world. And fatal distractions are any of those things that we internalize from outside ourselves and think that that's the reason we're motivated.
Mm. Yeah, it is crazy when you look at even somebody as an entrepreneur, and I have two sisters and we grew up in the same entrepreneurial household, but I'm the only one that thought this would be fun. You know, they look at me and they're like, no way, not interested.
Good example.
It's just, we interpret things differently and it's crazy how that happens. But yeah, you're exactly right. I love this topic.
Yeah.
So good.
So, you know, it's really also about being mindful. So just, you know, like when I was going through security at the airport, I had a mindful moment where I noticed how stressed out I was. And so I guess I would just encourage everyone to just take those mindful moments and check in. And if you're feeling that knot in your stomach or a little bit of stress or pressure, you know, ask yourself why and get to the bottom of it.
I think self-awareness is so needed. You really have to be aware. And I think sometimes as entrepreneurs, especially when a lot of people listening are not only entrepreneurs, but their parents, they're so busy, they don't have time to stop and assess and take in what is going on. And that is where the magic happens, when you can really look at what you're doing.
Yeah, I think we really need to take the, I so agree with you. And I think we need to take the point of view that if we're really busy, we can't afford not to take the time to check in.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, the beginning, you told us the story of cutting out meat immediately. Can we talk a little bit about willpower and discipline and, you know, why, like, is that what it is? Like, tell us more of that story and how we can start to really be motivated in certain areas of our life.
Yeah, thank you. And, you know, one of the things that you might do and your listeners might do is to think about a time when you really have been successful at starting or stopping a habit or achieving a goal and deconstruct it and notice how choice, connection, and competence were actually being created at that moment. So it gives you a good example. But in terms of discipline and willpower, those are things that I would consider red flags. If you ever say to yourself, oh, well, this is going to require discipline, that's a surefire sign that you're not optimally motivated, that you're missing either choice, connection, or competence, or all three, because you're looking for a way to compensate. If you're saying, wow, I need to use my willpower for this, then same thing. It's a red flag. When you are optimally motivated, you do not need discipline or willpower. In fact, those become the byproducts. People will look at you and say, oh, you're so disciplined. Oh, you have so much willpower.
I hear that so much. And I would never look at myself and say, oh, I'm like disciplining myself. Or
right.
It's not even something that I would ever think to describe myself. But people do when they look at my system and how I do everything.
Yes. So those are byproducts. And the thing that gets me so excited about this research is that when you are creating, whether it's in yourself or you're creating an environment like a workplace or a home or a school where it's more likely that people can experience and help create their own choice, connection, and competence, that when that's happening, you feel so good that you want more of it. And then when you have it, all these other things become byproducts, like trust. Trust is a byproduct of experiencing choice, connection, and competence. So if you want your customers, for example, to trust you, then you need to be able to make sure that you're giving them, whether it's on your website or in your store, a sense of choice, connection, and competence. If you have employees, you know, how are you embedding this into your processes, your systems, your procedures, the way you lead? If you're a parent, how do you help your children experience choice, connection, and competence? And if you do that, they will have discipline and willpower. Yeah. Those will just be byproducts.
Yeah. When you said motivating children with incentivizing the learning, even today, my little one wanted to go on an iPad and I said, you go do your piano lesson for 10 minutes and then I'll let you. So, okay. So tell me what I should have done.
Stacey, that's a great example. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. I feel so embarrassed that I have to share that, but I want to hear what I should do.
Yeah. Well, so here's the first question I would ask you is why do you think, I'm sorry, was it a daughter?
Yeah, daughter. Yep.
Why do you think your daughter doesn't want to practice piano? Why do you feel that you needed to incentivize her to play the piano?
She just started about a month or two ago, and I think she is still not confident she knows how to practice, and I definitely don't know how to teach her. So it's like the blind leading the blind a little bit.
Okay. So if you feel like she made the choice and that she doesn't feel like you're forcing her to play the piano, if she sees meaning, if she derives joy, if there's some kind of connection that she has to the piano, then maybe what's missing is competence, which means that she needs more structure. Mm-hmm. She needs to understand why 10 minutes a day, how's that going to help her? How is she going to grow and learn? If after each practice, if you simply said, tell me about the choices you made while you were practicing, how did you feel about those choices? What did you learn today? So it just, you just spent 10 minutes. Tell me what you learned.
Okay.
If you will ask those questions. I'm working with a young coach out of Nebraska whose team, baseball team, just recently won for the first time in 35 years the conference championship. And what he did after he read my book and we've talked and I've helped coach him is that after every practice, he asks he asks the kids to, in groups of four or five with no other coaches around, to answer three questions. What choices did I make today in practice? How did my choices really help and benefit the team? And what did I learn today in practice? And he simply asks them to answer those three questions. And he said it totally changed the nature of their practice. I actually went to Kentucky and worked with John Calipari and his team, which, they were ranked number one at the beginning of the season. And I taught their coaches this way of debriefing their practice sessions.
This is so good.
So I would encourage you as a mother to incorporate that with your child. So just don't assume that they're not motivated. Mm-hmm. See, here's the thing, Stacey. We're always motivated. The question is, what type of motivation do we have? And if it's suboptimal, that means we're not experiencing choice, connection, and competence. If it's optimal, it means that we are. And so your job as a mom is to help your daughter to create choice, connection, and competence so she's experiencing optimal motivation.
Yeah, this is so good. And one thing I do every night before they go to sleep is I make them say one thing that they're grateful for. And I'm going to add, tell me one thing you learned today. That's such a good follow-up question.
Please.
And they love grateful.
Or even the choice, because gratefulness is the connection.
Okay.
So if you just have to, and you don't have to do it all three every night, but you could just on one night say, well, tell me, let's talk about the choices that we made today. Okay. And also I'd like you just to listen to your language, Stacey. You said, I make my children.
When I said it, I caught it immediately.
Isn't that funny?
I knew. I'm like, that's not the way. They love it. They think it's so fun. So I can't believe I said that.
Yeah. A lot of times kids, and here's the thing that, and I could do a whole thing on parent, I'm writing a book on these ideas for parents, but it's called conditional regard. Okay. A lot of times what parents interpret as our kids are being excited about something is really our kids needing to please us, is really our kids saying, oh, I'll do this because mommy will love me more. So you really need to be careful. You, Stacey, but we all need to be careful that we're not interpreting our children's behavior as they are actually experiencing optimal motivation. They might actually be experiencing the need to please us, which actually erodes connection and choice. So,
well, I'll have to wait till this next book comes out too. Yeah. I'm going to get started with this one and then I'll move to the parenting one when that comes out. Okay. Oh, so good. So, okay, let's talk about some daily practices that we can do to stay motivated and to keep that motivation going.
Okay. And so again, and forgive me because I'm just being a motivation diva because I'm trying to change our perceptions about motivation, but it's not about getting motivated or staying motivated because we're always motivated. So it's about identifying the type of motivation that we have. Mm-hmm. And then if we're noticing that it's suboptimal because one of those three psychological needs is missing, then it's to shift our motivation so that it's optimal. So that would be really, what I would recommend is that every day you could just practice first identifying the type of motivation that you're currently experiencing around any goal or habit. Or sometimes it could just be, I don't know if you ever had that where you're like walking down the hallway and all of a sudden you have a mood and you go, oh, you know, and something's bothering you. Or you get in the car and you realize you're under a lot of stress. Sometimes I'll do that. And I realize I'm clenching the wheel of the car and I realize the reason I'm doing it, because I identify my motivational outlook and I realize, oh, wow, I'm feeling really imposed right now because the car in front of me is driving so slow and I'm in a hurry. And so what's happening? They're eroding my choice because I can't go around them because it's a one lane road or whatever. And I, you know, don't have any connection with these people. And I, you know, it's like all of a sudden I realize, oh, that's why I'm so stressed out. So it's identifying your current motivational outlook and then it's shifting it by noticing choice, connection, and competence, and then to reflect on it so that once you've shifted, you notice how it makes you feel. Because if you could begin to really notice how you feel, like I did that day on the airplane, what the science says is that choice, connection, and competence makes you feel so good, you want more of it. And so that's how you sustain the optimal motivation over time.
Yeah. And using the example of driving behind somebody that is going slow, that's something we can all relate to. And I think, you know, instead of focusing on what he is doing, focus on what you can be doing. So even just being grateful for a longer car ride to maybe listen to a podcast that you're like, or talking with your kids a little bit more, right? I think we're so focused on other people where we can't control them. And there's so many things that we could still be doing.
See, and that's exactly right. So we're focused on them. We have no control over it. So we've already, you know, that's where that choice gets eroded. And so, you know, if also then you could say, wow, what choices could I have made? And you go, well, I could have left earlier, you know, or I could choose to not be stressed out. And like you say, then find connection in some other way. Yeah. It's really powerful. It's just amazing, Stacey, how many times during the day we can use this information.
Definitely. Susan, this has been so incredible. Where can people find your book and just learn more about you? This has been so good. I could keep talking to you all day long.
Oh, thank you for that. That's so sweet. You are really a great conversationalist. So I really enjoyed it. My website is www.susanfowler.com. And there's a free motivation, what's your MO survey that people can take when they go there. It's free. You get immediate response. So that's fun. And then I've got all kinds of resources on my website and videos and stuff. And then my books are all available on Amazon. And what's going to be interesting is that if you type my name in Amazon right now, you're also going to come across another Susan Fowler who has become much more famous than I. And she's the gal that just put out the book called Whistleblower because she was the one that had the really weird year at Uber and ended up really helping the whole Me Too movement in Silicon Valley. So you'll see both that Susan J. Fowler and then the original Susan Fowler, and that's me.
Perfect. We will make sure to find it. Master Your Motivation. So good. Thank you so much for being here today, Susan. I appreciate your time.
Oh, me too. Thanks, Stacey.
And that's a wrap. If you are loving the Foot Traffic Podcast, then I know you would love Foot Traffic Formula. It's my group coaching and accountability program where we turn your marketing goals into results. Head over to foottrafficprogram.com and get your marketing working for you today.